for listening to Humanities Viewpoints, a podcast from the Humanities Institute at Wake Forest University. I'm your host, Assistant Director Amy Mapham. Welcome back. I'm very excited to launch this year's podcast series. We have some interesting conversations lined up for the fall semester, including episodes on narrative medicine, the presidential election, and the 75th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. This fall will also feature the launch of Humanities Viewpoints Roundtables, a recorded conversation in which two or three faculty members from different disciplines discuss a particular book or article. Watch for more information about these new roundtables later in September. Now on to today's episode. Hamilton, an American musical, tells the story of founding father Alexander Hamilton. It was written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, who also starred in the title role. It debuted off-Broadway at the Public Theater to critical acclaim and transferred to Broadway in August 2015. Since then, it was nominated for a record-setting 16 Tony Awards, winning 11, including Best Musical, as well as awards for Best Book and Best Score for its creator, Miranda. It was also the recipient of the 2016 Grammy Award for Best Musical Theater Album and the 2016 Pulitzer Prize for Drama. It's even made its way into Wake Forest University's undergraduate admissions application as a short answer question. You can read the full story about that at news.wfu.edu. Today on Humanities Viewpoints, Jake Redeman from the History Department talks with me about the Hamilton phenomenon. We discuss what Hamilton the musical gets right, what it leaves out, and what may have captivated Lin-Manuel Miranda's imagination, inspiring the creation of his version of this founding father without a father. Jake Redeman is an associate professor of history at Wake Forest University. His first book, Becoming Men of Some Consequence, presents the experiences of young men fighting in the Revolutionary War. His next projects explore the revolution in the Southeast. Dr. Redeman was also kind enough to share a link to one of the recorded Hamilton panels from the Scheer Conference he mentions during our talk. You can find that link on our podcast's webpage, humanities.wfu.edu/podcast. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Thanks for being here and talking about this with me today. So if you could start by giving the listeners a little bit of background on Alexander Hamilton, and while you do so, perhaps give a little insight into what you think might be what has captured the imagination of the public, and specifically Lin-Manuel Miranda and his musical.
Alexander Hamilton is born in the British Caribbean in the 1750s. I don't remember his exact birth date, in part because there's two. He always tells people that he's about 2 years younger than he probably was, just to make himself seem all the more impressive. He's orphaned young. His father abandons the family. His mother dies. He's working for kin. They die. He makes his way out, essentially, after a hurricane hits an island, and he writes a poem describing the destruction and God's wrath and providence and this, that, and the other. And it's a pretty good poem. Mm-hmm. And the literarily minded elite of this slave island basically take up a subscription to send him to college. Mm-hmm. And they send him to North America. And he hopes to go to Princeton, and he ends up at King's College, which becomes Columbia. Mm-hmm. Why does Lin-Manuel Miranda find this story compelling? Mm-hmm. The way he has told it is he was reading Ron Chernow's biography on the beach. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, what a book to bring to the beach.
Yeah, yeah, not
it's like 800 pages. Yeah. But it's a well-written biography. Mm-hmm. And Miranda found the story to be so New York and such an immigrant story. And he says such a hip-hop story of writing your way out, and that all of these conflicts are so rooted in text, in writing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, why has the public in general found it so compelling? Right. Well, that's a bigger question.
I'm interested in your opinion of the musical as a scholar. It's been praised by historians for how it deals with the complicated politics of the period. But it's also been criticized that it over-glorifies this guy and also inflates things like his opposition to slavery. Where do you find yourself in that argument?
Well, I haven't seen the play, but I own the soundtrack.
Yes.
I love it. I also love musical theater. It is a great American musical. Yeah. Things that Hamilton, an American musical, gets profoundly right. Mm-hmm. The first thing is the reality of profound disagreements within the founding moment. That's the first thing it gets right. The second thing I think it gets right is conveying those participants' understandings of the stakes of the moment they were living in. Incredibly high stakes, incredibly high anxiety. The sense that all republics fail. That is a historic reality. The sense that history will be aware of them. There's a moment in time where one of John Adams' biographers says that it becomes clear that Adams starts writing like he's wearing a toga, because in his mind he is now writing to posterity as well. The third thing that I think this musical gets right as a piece of art is it gets something really correct. Lin-Manuel Miranda gets something really profoundly correct about history. And that history, the story, is first, it's contingent. Things don't have to happen the way they did. And the second thing is that history, as a record of the past, of events, is incomplete. And it rests on what documents survived, what documents were destroyed purposefully, accidentally, and then who's telling the tale and why. The line that I love and that other historians have loved is, who lives, who dies, who tells your story? It's like, that is a historiographical statement, a philosophical statement about history, if there ever was one.
It gets right the age of the protagonists.
They are young, young people. We have this image of them as old men, as old people. They're not. They're in their 20s or 30s. The average age of enlistment for a soldier in the Continental Army in Virginia is about 19. They're not boys. They're not children. They're youths. You know, they're not married. They're not leaving children and wives on the farm, by and large. Because why would you do that? Are you some sort of sociopath? Like, if you leave your children and wife at home, it's like they're gonna starve. The labor in this agricultural society, it is the labor of men and women and young people together that keeps body and soul together. Now, that said, a 17-year-old, a 19-year-old, 23-year-old, that young man's military labor could be expendable, or they might be able to make something of themselves. The fastest way to the heights of ambition, so some of them say, is maybe I could get into the army and do something. That's a thing that the Hamilton musical gets really right, that there's a simultaneously a youthful idealism and also a youthful ambition. Now, with some weaknesses. I was at a big conference this summer in New Haven, Connecticut, for the Society of Historians of the Early American Republic, SHEAR, S-H-E-A-R. And it was the Hamilton show. It was the like the first opening plenary session was a roundtable presentation on Hamilton, which actually included a half-hour filmed interview with Lin-Manuel Miranda. We're hoping that we can get permission to put it up on C-SPAN or something. There was also another roundtable panel. And the take of these historians of the early republic is they love this musical as art. They love it as history. What it is getting wrong, the one really big gap, is actually the big gap historically that makes this musical work as a piece of popular art. And it's Alexander Hamilton's actual politics. Hamilton is a politico. He is he's an operator in this play. He is not a political philosopher. His elitism is absent. The substance of his debates with Jefferson and Madison are absent. It's very personal. The politics become very personal, which they were. But the ideological substance is drained out. And one of the participants at this conference pointed out that would Hamilton recognize himself in this musical? And she didn't think that he would, because he's essentially a populist folk hero. And if there is anything that Alexander Hamilton, the highest of the high Federalists, would be, this man who believed there was a natural aristocracy mm-hmm. of talent. This would be really weird to him.
Right.
This would be really weird. He'd be psyched that he's on the $10 bill, but yeah. that his actual political philosophy has been drained out. Mm-hmm. That would be weird to him. But there's a reason why Miranda has drained it out. Because he's not ignorant of it. Mm-hmm. This artist has read scholarship extensively, the sources extensively. What he's done as an artist is he has left Hamilton as an empty vessel into which we can pour our politics, left, right, center. Are you a populist? Are you a capitalist? Mm-hmm. Are you a nationalist? Whatever your personal view is as an audience member, Miranda gives you a character into which you can imbue your own political ideology as an American. Now, my question is, are people going to care about this musical if they put it on stage in London?
Right, yeah.
Because it's such an American story.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, that's the gap. And there are, as you said, there are other shortcomings. Is Hamilton really an anti-slavery activist? Mm-hmm. Well, he's a paid member of an abolition society.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
His dearest best friend, John Laurens, has a plan to basically free slaves in Low Country, South Carolina, mm-hmm. give them guns and uniforms and their freedom with their weapons, mm-hmm. and defeat the British invasion of the American South.
Yeah.
Hamilton thinks this is a great idea.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Now, of course, he thinks it's a great idea, and his explanation is the closer soldiers come to machines, the better. Because properly officered, that's what really matters. So it's like, yeah. guys like us, you know, Alexander Hamilton and John Laurens, that's what really matters. And so ironically, his argument in favor of arming slaves is their experience of domination and servitude has made them the perfect soldier to obey. So there's ways in which 18th century anti-slavery thinking doesn't feel like liberation. So he's a man of his time, which in some ways, Miranda has to strip out so that he can be, as a character, a man for our time.
Are there other historical figures that you would like to see get the Hamilton treatment?
This is a question that I have been thinking on. This is a question that I heard put to Miranda.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And his response has been, I'm not doing it. Someone right. else has to do it. And I think that's a fair statement, mm-hmm. which is, what has made this musical work? Financially, artistically, mm-hmm. in terms of pop culture awareness, like what has made this work? Mm-hmm. Are there other characters for whom this could work? Mm-hmm. Back around the bicentennial, the musical 1776 was a huge artistic and financial success. Mm-hmm. A Man for All Seasons mm-hmm. is a huge, you know, about Thomas More mm-hmm. is a huge artistic success. Mm-hmm. Hilary Mantel's books on yeah. Cromwell,
yep.
A sort of an anti-Man for All Seasons,
yeah.
huge success. People love historical fiction, historical recreations, biographies. Mm-hmm. And I think the question that we have to ask ourselves as scholars, as consumers of these things is, well, why is this good? Why do we like this? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's because it's telling us something deeper about the human condition. Sometimes it's because it's, you know, roughly riffing on our own time, for better or worse. So who would I like to see this done for? I don't care. Do it.
Yeah. Have you found in the classroom that this could be something useful to use? Would you bring this in? Are students aware of it? Are they asking questions about it?
I taught my course on the American Revolution in the spring as the excitement about the Tonys was starting to
yeah.
ramp up, and it was clear that this was getting big.
Mm.
This musical was getting big. And I asked students
yeah.
before class got rolling one day, like, do they have the soundtrack? Have they heard it? And there was crickets. I was shocked. I thought on it. And I think it just hadn't hit their awareness yet here at Wake. Now, that said, the sort of person who really loves a soundtrack is younger adolescents. Middle schoolers, younger high schoolers.
Yeah.
I thoroughly expect in a year or three or five, students are going to be stepping into a classroom on the American Revolution or the early American Republic, and they're going to be humming these songs.
Yeah.
And I'm ready. I am ready to, myself, other scholars of this field are ready to meet those students where they are. Because students are very savvy consumers of information and narratives. They know that this is not the full story. And they want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Already students want to know. So what's been left out?
Right, yeah.
Or I want to read that letter. Where can I find it?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you can find it right here in this book.
Yeah, yeah.
Or what do you want to write a paper on? Our goal is to let that passion fuel further inquiries and deeper understandings. So I think I was so surprised at the general sense of, what are you talking about, Robin? There was a couple flickers. There were a couple flickers. I was like, oh, so you are my theater nerd. So okay,
yeah.
I gotcha. But I think that was a very particular moment, and I don't expect that will happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Would I use stuff from Hamilton in a class? That's a great question. First off, I mean, can you find a stable, reliable YouTube link?
Right.
The owners of these properties are very careful to maintain control. But if I can, I do.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, there was a very interesting musical about Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
Bloody Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
I loved that show. I saw it twice.
Did it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a great show. And it's not really a show about Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a show about America in the 2000s
mm-hmm.
and a general sense of what is the constructive and destructive force of democratic populism. There's some big questions there.
Yeah.
So I think the question for a show like Hamilton, okay, what are these big questions?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the power of the state. You know, who's a member of society? Who gets rights? And then also, how do we know? How do we know this?
How did you find your way to the American Revolution that time as your field?
I think the American Revolution, colonial America, revolutionary America, the early republic, are fascinating to me. Because they are so different
mm-hmm.
from the world that I live in. I had studied a lot of medieval and classical history
mm-hmm.
in college. I actually never took a course on American history in college. So I'm profoundly undereducated in some ways. I've been catching up. So encountering early American history, it felt like an alien world with hints of our present, with hints of what will come,
mm-hmm.
with hints of our culture, our politics, our questions. Not that it all has to be about us. I think that's a trite way to look at history, and not really the reason why I do it. I've been drawn to revolutionary America because it's this amazing hinge between eras. It's full of questions of control, of choice by individuals, by families, by communities, of liberty and compulsion, of creation, of the most hopeful and idealistic creation and the most nihilistic destruction,
mm-hmm.
and that these forces can be divided by a province line, by a year,
mm-hmm.
by one sibling or another in a family.
Mm-hmm.
And because of filial pietism, the worship of our ancestors,
mm-hmm.
the number of sources that have been saved, preserved, there are diaries that are, frankly, the most quotidian, boring text. It's
mm-hmm.
like, rained, clear, heard frogs singing. It's very common in early modern diaries that these farm boys will write down like, hey, the apple trees were in bloom.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, oh, hey, I heard frogs singing for the first time. Like, spring's really here, guys. Maybe it won't be so cold.
Right.
Now. But these are diaries by ordinary people leading
mm-hmm.
very ordinary lives that get saved because that's Granddad's diary from the war.
Yeah.
So there's texts and insights, texts that offer insights into ordinary people that would never have survived. Men and women, young people, ordinary people, elite people that we have readily available at a scale that is almost unreadable when you pile it all together because of a patriotic sense of this is our history, this is the beginning, and I'll use it. And I do.
Yeah.
And it is a fantastic opportunity.
That is something that I think is so part of the show, that idea of legacy carries throughout the whole musical.
Well, the super dramatic number in which Elizabeth Schuyler Hamilton burns
the letters.
The bad letters is like, I will not be someone's book.
Yeah.
She is not the only one who does that.
Yeah.
Martha Washington, after George dies in 1799, she doesn't touch his stuff. She takes her letters and she separates them out and she makes sure that no one ever sees them.
Yeah.
She burns them. Because she knows. She knows that the eye of history will be upon her and her family.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me that it's the women who do this. Not all. I mean, some like Abigail Adams are prominently and proudly preserved. It's interesting who has made a choice that they don't want to be part of this narrative because they know it will not be on terms that they can control.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is why it's striking that it's women who are doing this because these are, even the elite women know, this is not a world in which I can control my fate. And my relationship. And thus, this is the act of control that I can take.
Yeah.
That is perhaps something that is, I would hope, would be alien, feel alien to our time.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for this opportunity to chat, Amy. I really appreciate it.
That was historian Jake Ruddeman on Hamilton, The Man in the Musical. Remember, you can listen to us on the Wake Forest University Humanities Institute webpage, humanitiesinstitute.wfu.edu, or find us on iTunes. Just search for Humanities Viewpoints in the podcast section. Watch for new episodes throughout the year. Thanks for listening.